we are going to continue the meeting. And we are now at item 3, and I do have some cards. Let's see here. So why don't we have the report, and we'll have public comment, and then commissioners. So item 3, who will introduce item 3? Okay, Mr. Grinnell.
You have before you staff report for this item. It's very simple. That is being recommended is that the employment contracts for the three managers, the finance director, the human resource manager, and the harbor master, have added to those contracts a provision for a three-year term, and then to delete the section 3, paragraph E, that would no longer be relevant or needed. However, what's important to keep in mind is that all other terms and conditions of each of the contracts remain the same, and in particular, these appointments and these contracts still provide for at-will employment. That's what they are now. They will continue to be at-will. And there would be no change in compensation terms or anything else. So it's just that. And so that's before you.
Thank you. Why don't we go to public comments then before we get to commissioners? And I have two. I have Ms. Leslie Webster and Mr. Leonard Warren.
Commissioners, you are all aware of the many management problems that have been reported. These include financial mismanagement and upper management's filing of multiple harassment complaints against the commissioner soon after that commissioner had filed a harassment complaint against the general manager. Why is the general manager recommending the board approve an amendment to extend management agreements from at-will to three-year contracts? The timing seems extremely ill-advised. Contract amendments should not be considered until after all pending harassment investigations have been completed.
Thank you. Mr. Warren?
I would start out by asking what's broken that needs fixing. In my experience, non-represented supervisory personnel are always at will. I can't think of any in the multiple agencies that I've been involved with where supervisory non-represented employees are not at will. And so, you know, again, what's going on here that we don't know about, the manager isn't telling you about, well, he's going to get fired in January 2015 after the next election when these two are gone and there's a new board majority. Then he'll go, and then the new manager will fire most of the rest of the office staff. So he's just trying to protect them now, and this is not necessary, and you should not approve this. There's nothing broken here that needs to be.
Thank you. Okay, we have now commissioner questions. Commissioners? Any questions?
I have questions, but I seem to always go first, so maybe someone else wants to go first.
I don't know if there are other questions.
Any other questions?
I'll make a motion to approve the recommendation of the general manager as pertains to the terms of employment for the director of finance, human resources manager, and the Harvard Masters to a three-year contract and the deletion of Section 3, Paragraph E. So moved.
Okay, I hear a motion. Second. Do I hear a second?
Oh, second.
Okay, I hear a second. So now we have questions. Mr. Brennan.
Am I the only one with questions?
Okay. So
this is a question for the general manager. Why are you recommending this change?
I'm recommending this change simply because it is more or less consistent with some past practice. Other previous manager contracts did have time periods which have been requested by those particular individuals. So those were adopted. So this is, in fact, nothing new.
When was that? What contracts were those specifically?
Harbor Masters.
Oh, Harbor Masters?
Yeah.
Had a time, they were not at will?
Everyone, all right, let's get this really clear for the record, for those who aren't listening. All managers' contracts have been, are, and will continue to be at will.
So if they're at will, and if at will means that you may be terminated at any time with or without cause, why would you add a 3-year clause to the agreement? Because it doesn't make sense to do that if they're at will. The two things are contradictory to each other.
Not at all, if I may respond, Commissioner. The at will condition is overriding. Okay, so that's always in place. Nevertheless, having an actual stated term, in this case, I see as a way of providing, as far as I'm concerned, a vote of confidence in these three managers who have provided and continue to provide, in my estimation, outstanding service to this district and the public that we serve.
So it's,
and it's a way of recognizing them and saying, yes, we'd like to see you continue here, notwithstanding the fact that the basic underlying condition of these executive contracts, of these positions, is at will.
So it's not really meaningful if, other than just, it doesn't really hold any legal meaning. Is that correct? Gene, that's a question for you. Gene, why would we have a 3-year agreement and have an at-will agreement, all the same agreement?
I can only address what the language says. I think he's explained what his thinking is in proposing it to you. But if this is added, the way I would read this contract to say is that for the next 3 years, these three individuals have their terms of compensation and conditions of employment governed by this particular contract for a period of 3 years. The language that they are at will may be terminated any time and without cause is not, he's not suggesting that be taken out of the contract.
So that's going to stay in the contract?
Yes, that he indicated that in the staff.
Yes, I've said it three times.
Well, it's very confusing in this, this staff report. It's not clear to me. So that's why I'm asking, and I think that's why the public's confused too. It's a confusing memo. So the contracts, just so everybody knows that's here tonight, if you want to read the contracts, they're on the back table, all three of them, the current contracts without the amendments. And the suggested amendments are included in the board packet, which is, I believe, also back there on the table, hopefully. So from a legal standpoint, by adding this language about this 3-year term or whatever, would that potentially do any harm to a future board or tie the hands of this board in any way or a future board differently than the contract as it's currently written?
No. They are at-will employees, they will remain as at-will employees.
So what it means is that then would they have to have a new contract in 3 years? Is that what that means?
It means this contract will have a term of 3 years.
So right now the contract just sort of is indefinitely going.
Correct.
And so this would change it to only a 3-year contract versus, so it would create the need for new contracts in 3 years.
It is a contract with a 3-year term, correct? Proposed to be a contract with a 3-year term.
So really all we're doing is we're, instead of having an open-ended agreement, we're going to have a 3-year agreement.
That's correct.
And what advantage does that have for the district? I'm asking Gene.
I don't know if it's an advantage or a disadvantage, but the change is that instead of having an open-ended contract with these folks, you have a 3-year contract with them.
how does that affect the board from a legal standpoint?
If this change is made, these three individuals have the terms and conditions of their employment set for the next 3 years and governed by the terms of this contract. Right now, they have an open-ended contract with those terms and conditions in it.
And I know you work for a lot of other city councils and special districts and whatnot. Do you find that with the management, I'm not talking about the general manager or the city manager, but with just like, say, your person in charge of finance or planning or whatever, do those people usually have a contract with that's limited in number of years as being suggested now, or are they usually more open-ended contracts? I'm just curious about what's typical.
In the majority of clients that we represent, their upper management have organized, and so they are part of a collective bargaining unit, and they are covered by memorandums of understanding that are negotiated with the board. You don't have that situation.
So you don't work with any boards or councils that have management that are not unionized?
I have one client, and each one of those department heads has an employment contract.
Has an open contract?
Has an employment contract, and to the best of my recollection, they are open-ended.
Open-ended, okay. And what do you think is standard for most special districts? Do you have any idea?
I really can't speak to any broader experience than my own, and that's what I've just shared with you.
Okay. All right. And then, so there are no consequences that we need to be aware of this change. Gene?
Well, I'm not sure what you mean by consequences. The only thing that's being suggested here is that you move from an open-ended contract to a three-year contract.
But could this have some financial consequences? Like, I don't know. I'm just trying to, if we're changing a contract, I want to make sure we're looking at it from all sides and the board's warned if there's any.
Well, the only financial consequence I see is one that perhaps could benefit the district, and that is that he's suggesting that Section E be removed, and that was the section that indicated that employees, if the general manager level could not be terminated for a period of 90 days, that he's suggesting that that be removed.
So that means, just so I understand what that means, because just, you know, I want to point out that these contracts were only just made available. Like, they weren't part of the board packet. So I'm just reading them now. I was trying to understand this. If that section is taken out, does that mean that if the general manager wanted to terminate one of the management people, they could do that without any... I mean, what's the point of the 90-day thing if they're at will? I don't understand that. And it doesn't really mean anything, does it, if they're at will?
Well, the way the contract currently reads is those individuals were at will, but under Section E it indicated that if you had a change in your general manager, that the new general manager could not terminate employees for the first 90 days of his or her employment.
Okay.
As a guarantee of continuation for 90 days under new management.
So if
Peter is suggesting that that be removed from the contract.
Okay, so if that were removed from the contract and a new general manager came on board and they wanted to hire new management and let go of the current management, would the three-year term end up potentially causing additional litigation or cost to the district or any kind of legal ramifications we should know about?
Well, I'll answer that question the way I was too, that no one can ever guarantee you that someone will sue when they have absolutely nothing to sue about. So, for that statement.
President, I'm going to rise to a point of order. Mr. Speaker, I've spoken for 10 minutes now. It's in violation of Robert's Rules of Order, and I call for the question.
How do you know it was 10 minutes? Because I don't think we have the timer on.
We do.
Who has the timer on?
I do.
Well, that's not the timer
the
right here that we
questions.
Use. So, I still have a few more questions.
I call for the question.
Commissioner Brennan, we're going to vote on this,
okay.
On this item.
Well, I can't vote yes on something I haven't been able to ask all my questions on.
Well, we're going to vote now because the question's been called, and so what we're going to do is I would like to do a roll call on this.
Commissioner Brennan?
No.
Commissioner Holsinger? Aye.
Commissioner Parravano?
Aye.
Commissioner Tucker?
Aye.
President Bernardo?
Aye. We have four ayes, one no. Motion carries. We are now at number five. Item number five, time limit for commissioners speaking on agenda items.
Mr. President, members of the commission, I ask this item to be placed on the agenda. At this time, for purposes of discussion, I would make a motion that commissioners' statements on agenda items outside of Robert's Rules of Order be limited to 5 minutes. I would so move.
Second.
Yeah, I have a motion and a second, so questions?
On the question, if I may explain under the motion, Mr. President, members of the commission, it's not always, but there's occasions. We have 3 minute speaker limits for people in the audience, and the clerk keeps time for that. I think sometimes when the commission, and I'll speak to myself as well, get going on an issue or a motion, without a motion, we can tend to spend more than 5 minutes, and it might not be to the benefit of other members that have to listen to that. And that's why I asked for a five-minute limit. This in no way has anything to do with anything being contrary to Robert's Rules of Order. Robert's Rules of Order comes into effect when an agency does not have clarification on what it wants to do for a certain agenda item in protocol. Right now, Robert's Rules of Order calls for a motion to be made, a speaker to be spoken the first time, and not to be heard until others have spoken, and then repeat speak again for 10 minutes. And this had nothing to do with that. That would still be in effect. If there's a motion on the floor, the 10-minute rule will still be there, according to Roberts. This is for items like maybe the statements by commissioners, maybe the bills and claims, maybe the reports by staff. 5 minutes is ample time to ask questions. And if there's something more serious, the member can certainly meet with the staff member before the meeting to discuss issues. But I think 5 minutes is fair, and it keeps the meeting moving. So that's the discussion on my motion.
Thank you. Questions?
Sorry.
Okay, that's the end of the report. Yes, before we get to commissioner questions, thank you. Sorry about that. We do have 1, 2, 3, 4 cards on this. We have, and I'm just going to take them in this order. It'll be Merrill Bobiel, Leonard Warren, Leslie Webster, Bill Kehoe. So, Mr. Bobiel.
Yes, good evening, President Bernardo and commissioners. My name is Merrill Bobiel, and I do have some comments about item five, but actually before I do that, I'd sort of like to have some idea of knowing whether the comments are going to appear in the minutes of the Harvard District Commission meetings, because that's the only record, okay, minutes are the official record, okay, of the Commission's meetings. And Mr. Brennan spoke at the beginning of the meeting, and that was really the question I had, is what advantage would there be for the public to make a comment on any item on the agenda if nothing more than the name of the person was going to appear in the minutes. In other words, there was no summary of what the person had to say. So I'd sort of like to really know ahead of time whether the minutes are going to reflect anything about what one says. I don't know if this the buzzword and the past always was transparency and openness of meetings, particularly public meetings. And I think that's really the question that has to be asked here. I have a comment, and that is that I think that in government, in particular, it's important to have that openness and transparency at the local level. If we are going to expect this at other levels of government, both the state and the federal government, We live in a time when there's a lot of criticism of the government, and it seems to me that it's really important to have our public meetings available for public consumption, in other words, videotaping, something more than the podcast, okay? I don't think that the minutes of a public meeting are going to be appear on any bestseller list, okay? But I think it's important that they be accurate, okay? Now, I'll move on to the comments. I think that using the same rationale, openness and transparency, limiting speech to 5 minutes simply doesn't make sense. And having a two-tier system of following Robert's Rules of Order for some things, 10 minutes, and each time for up to two items, I think is probably more accurate, but I think that 5 minutes is out of the question, and I would oppose it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Warren?
Good evening, Mr. President, Commissioners. When you look at Robert's Rules, it's painfully clear that he can be very large bodies, the Senate, the House of Representatives, and for a five-member board, Robert's Rules is really silly. My board explicitly, according to our code, does not run under Robert's Rules. That's never been an issue. In those council, which I was on for one full term, explicitly does not run under Robert's Rules, and it's not been a problem. Now, in most situations, the time limits on board members might be okay. Maybe sometimes I've been sitting in public meetings wishing that they apply the same time limits to the elected officials that they do to members of the public. But the problem here is, once again, this is aimed specifically at stifling one commissioner, Commissioner Brennan. And it wouldn't be a problem if staff didn't stonewall her when she tries to get her questions answered offline. So they won't talk to her offline, and now you won't let her even get her questions answered during the meetings. This is all of you need to be in jail, except her.
Thank you. Ms. Webster?
I'm puzzled as to why Commissioner Tucker is attempting to limit the ability of his fellow commissioners to ask questions. This appears to be yet another shameless attempt to prevent Commissioner Brennan from doing her job. Commissioner Tucker and Commissioner Holsinger, you are appalling and embarrassing in your effort to tie the hands of the board, obstruct transparency, and bring the public process to a grinding halt.
Thank you. Mr. Kehoe.
Good evening, Commissioners. Bill Keogh, Moss Beach. I agree with the three speakers that went before me. I really feel, you know, I didn't want to come here tonight, but I've been watching this progression going on now for quite a few months, where this board is turning insular and is shutting down all open and free discussion, which you are mandated to do for the public, not for each other, for the public. And if one commissioner has questions they're asking, the public wants them to ask those questions, and they should be entertained, and we shouldn't be allowing time limits that are just basically a tyranny of the majority to shut down any kind of opposing questions. Now, I know I said this before, and I'm really getting to a point. We had a similar situation with the fire board, and we went through an expensive, time-consuming campaign to have a recall. Fortunately, we don't have to do this here because you're coming up for election soon. But you are giving us enough fodder to come up with a hell of a campaign strategy to kick you out. And I'll tell you, I don't like to threaten people. It's not my style. But I cannot sit here and watch four grown men pick on a woman who is new to the board, who is being stonewalled. We all see it. We read about it and talk about it in the review.
It's not just like you guys, you know, the fact that we have to have a public person spend time to put this on video so people can see it. And then you go and you change your minutes to actions. So we can't even read the minutes to see what is going on unless we show up at the meetings, are all showing that you want to shut the public out. And that will be the campaign rally to kick you out. Now, you can look at me like I'm dumb or the rest of it. I did it before, and I'll tell you, I'm going to do it again. Get on my television.
Thank you. Okay, commissioner's question. Are there any questions?
I have some questions.
Okay, Commissioner Brennan?
So, I would agree with the public comment earlier that most of the special districts, a lot of city councils, a lot of boards in general for local government do not follow Robert's Rules of Order. In fact, I can't think of one that I know of that I go to meetings for that actually does follow Robert's Rules of Order. And this board doesn't follow Robert's Rules of Order to the T by any means. So I know that we've had input from another member of the public who really supports Robert's Rules of Order. However, if you read Robert's Rules of Order, it's clear that it is really for a much larger body at a higher level of government. And there's really no other way to interpret it. I mean, you read the rules and it's clear that that's what the rules are intended for a larger body and a higher level of government. I do think that there is some good information in the rules that's useful, so I do think that it's a good reference guide. I see the value in it. But this particular motion is not consistent with Robert's rules, and it's being made by someone who has been, in the past, repeatedly wanting to, or saying that he wants to, follow Robert's rules. So it's in conflict with, the motion is in conflict with previous information provided by the commissioner. So that's a little confusing. I do feel specifically targeted by the motion, so I'm just going to say that. And if you read the Half Moon Bay Review today, on the front page are comments by the motion maker that specifically target me and name me by name. So I don't think I'm imagining it. You know, to continue to try to shut down the public process, I am very disappointed with this motion. I'm certainly not going to be supporting it. And in Robert's Rules of Order, it clearly says no member shall speak more than twice during the same day to the same question, only once on appeal, nor longer than 10 minutes at one time. That's the rule. So to create some other system that's confusing and not consistent doesn't make any sense to me, and I'm definitely not going to be voting for that. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioners, are there any other questions?
So just to be clear to the maker of the motion, then, this is specific to all items on the agenda, including the consent calendar, commissioner requests, new business, staff reports, operations, and then committee reports and commission statements.
All items on the agenda that do not have a motion on the floor. If there's a motion on the floor, Robert's Rules of Order would take precedent. And this motion has nothing to do with Robert's Rules of Order.
Okay. Thank you.
I just have two. One is to Commissioner Tucker. So, for example, let's say, based on what you said, so let's say, like, commissioner statements. Would that apply for commissioner statements?
Yes.
So 5 minutes for a commissioner statement, okay. And committee report, things like, in other words, things that are not on the agenda item where there's
a motion.
Where there's a motion.
Correct.
Okay, I see. Okay, second question is to council. Are we bound, is the Harbor District in any way bound by Robert's rules? Do we have to
conform to Robert's rules?
Public entities in the state of California are not required to comply with Robert's Rules of Order. Many public agencies look to them as a guide to assist them in running their meetings, but elected officials are entitled to adopt policies and procedures to manage their meetings, and many of those, if you look at them, have time limits imposed both on the public, sometimes under public comment, and on commissioner statements, presentations as well, so that you can get through the business, the public's business that you're here to conduct. It's not, in my experience, it's not unusual.
Can you name any that you know of that do have time limits on the board members' comments?
Yes, I can only speak to those clients that you represent. I haven't surveyed the field. Foster City, I believe it's in their ordinance, has time limits on the order of speech and on the time that council members can address certain items.
And what are those?
I believe it's 5 minutes. I have to go back and read the code. It's not been an issue in that
city. Do they enforce it?
It's not been an issue in that city. Most of the statements are very short. The meetings run pretty quickly, so it's not been an issue there.
So they're not enforcing it?
There's been no need to enforce, so I can't say whether they were or not, because okay. Their meetings tend to run very quickly. I believe the town of Woodside has a practice. I don't believe it is... I'm sorry, I haven't looked at these, so I don't know if it's written policy, but there's a very particular way in which they conduct their meeting. They allow everyone to have one opportunity to speak. Again, there really, in my many years, there really haven't been issues about any long speeches by any individuals that have called into question this issue.
So if I could ask, finish up with my questions. I'm sorry, do you have any other questions?
No.
Okay. If I could just finish up. So what I'm hearing then is that really it's up to the governing body to sort of make their own rules. I mean, that's kind of what I'm hearing. Is that accurate?
It is, but keeping in mind that everyone who comes to the meeting should have an opportunity to speak. So, for example, if you adopted a rule that said only the president will speak mm-hmm. on these particular right. agenda items, that right. would not be appropriate.
So in other words...
What the law says is that everyone should have an opportunity to speak. Then it is up to the board to determine how you want to run your meeting and what time limits you want to propose in order to get through the business you need.
Thank you. So that is exactly where the gray area is then, correct? Because that's where the flexibility is depending upon the governing body.
Correct.
So it really, what I'm hearing then, okay, and if you could just, I know this may be a strange question, but depending upon the governing body, it really... is a philosophical question by each governing body. They have to determine, for example, you just mentioned Foster City or Woodside, that is that particular culture of that governing body, how they wish to govern themselves. And let's say they want quicker meetings and they want 3-minute speeches or whatever, then that's up to them. That's kind of what I'm hearing. So it's really individual.
That's right. Here. Sometimes it is agenda driven. Mm-hmm. If you have an agenda where you have an item and you have 150 people who want to speak to you, mm-hmm. at that meeting, the board may decide to impose different time limits. It's a policy question.
Thank you. Yeah, it's really, you know, what type of government do you believe in? That's kind of the question. Okay, that concludes my questions. Thank you. Let's vote, and can we, any other questions for the call? Okay, let's have a roll call, please.
Commissioner Brennan?
No.
Commissioner Holsinger?
Aye.
Commissioner Paravano?
Aye.
Commissioner Tucker?
Aye.
President Bernardo?
No. That's 3 ayes, 2 noes. The motion carries. The motion passes. Thank you. So we are now, I'm sorry, we are now at item 6, bills and claims in the amount of $266,220.73.
Good President, members of the Commission, I review the bills and claims and make a motion to approve in the amount of $266,220.73. And if I have a second, I have a comment.
Okay, I hear a motion.
Second.
And I hear a second.
On the question of the motion, Mr. President, there was one faux pas, if you will. We sent our annual payment to the Department of Boating and Waterways
but this past year they were assigned to Park and Recreation Department. So our check was kicked back and we were asked to issue a new check to the Park and Recreation Department in the amount of $1.3 million. But that's just a little faux pas and our payment is accepted.
Thank you. Question on that though. So are we being leveraged a fee, a late fee or anything like that?
No,
it's due December 31st.
Okay, just make sure.
Yeah.
Okay, just want to make sure. Okay. Any questions on bills and claims for Treasurer Tucker?
I have some comments I want to make about bills and claims. So I put in a request early last week to receive the bills and claims via PDF file due to the fact that it is not appropriate for me to be at the administrative office due to the harassment complaint that I filed in August. And that's where the bills and claims are located. Also, in light of the two harassment complaints that were filed against me in October, I don't want to put the staff who may or may not have filed a harassment complaint against me in a situation where they have to have any sort of one-on-one meeting with me. That doesn't feel appropriate. So I made the request to receive PDF of the bills and claims, and I've already explained why I want to look at the bills and claims, but if anybody has questions, I'd be happy to explain that again. I was told no by the general manager. Then I was told whatever. Then I was told that he would provide the PDF, but it would only come after the meeting where we vote on those bills and claims. So the PDF would not be provided in advance of the vote, the decision, on the particular bills and claims. So essentially, it would be useless. I'm still asking for the PDF, but I'd like the PDF to come in advance of the vote. And I think that that's reasonable. And I think it's a wise thing to do. So that's what I requested. I just wanted to let everybody here know that I was not provided with the bills and claims in advance of this meeting. I have not looked at them. That's it.
Thank you, Commissioner Brennan. This does raise a very unusual situation because of the claims that are going on, and it's understandable that that you wouldn't be asked to be in a situation that would compromise any type of investigation or claims or anything like that. So can we have staff look at the situation, try to find a solution that wouldn't
May I comment?
Yes, Mr. Bernard.
Okay, first of all, on the subject of these harassment complaints, I've checked with counsel, and there's nothing that precludes Commissioner Brennan from coming to the administration office to look at those complaints. For example, the treasurer comes to the office to look at those complaints. She could come at that time and look at them and not come in contact with people who she may feel uncomfortable coming in contact with for whatever reason. That's number one. Number two, as to providing the PDF, it's simply not possible. And the reason is that the bills and claims become prepared and available on the Monday or Tuesday when the treasurer has typically come to review them. And there is simply not enough time to unstaple all of those bills and invoices and put them in and scan them and turn them into PDF. It can't happen.
And if I could interrupt you, and just for the public's information, when I was the treasurer before Treasurer Tucker, I would come in on Fridays, and I remember I'd come in bright and early, and my stacks averaged this high. Okay? They would average this high, and I would have to go through each, I went through each one and made sure that all the numbers were okay, but they're this high. So from a photocopying and PDFing perspective, I mean, yeah, you could do it. It would take, I would say, at least an hour, more than an hour. I mean, or more than that. But
Yeah, I know you're shaking your head. It would take a while. So, Commissioner Tucker, do you have a solution?
Let me ask
a question first. Procedurally, what I do is I go in there on the Tuesday before the meeting, 9, 10 o'clock in the morning. And when I go in, I can choose to talk to staff or not talk to staff. The basket this high is sitting in the conference room with a ruler and a pen. And I go in there, and what coffee I get, and I close the door and I do my business. Why couldn't you prepare the same thing for Commissioner Brennan?
So first, I'd like to... Mm-hmm.
Commissioner Brennan. Is that possible?
Sure.
If you can do it for me, you can do it for her, sir.
Yes.
Okay, so we got the answer.
It's possible for any treasurer or any other commissioner who wants to see them.
To not have contact with anyone.
Sure.
The door would just be open or... Okay.
That's what happened.
Commissioner Brennan.
So, first of all, the first point was by the general manager that I could come in and meet with Commissioner Tucker when he reviews the bills and claims. That is not a good solution because I have no idea if Commissioner Tucker has filed a harassment complaint against me. He is considered staff. He receives a paycheck at this district. So, therefore, that is not a good solution. It doesn't make any sense. And that assumes that, you know, that assumes a lot. So, that's not logical.
I didn't file a complaint for the record. That's not I. One down.
Well, okay, I don't know who filed the complaint. I'm not supposed to know.
Okay, can we please, Commissioner Brennan, just finish with your question?
So the next point is regarding, I did go to the meeting, office to review bills and claims, not for this week's bills and claims, but for the last meeting. I was not allowed to look at the bills and claims by myself. I had Deborah there part of the time, and I had Marietta Harris come in and refuse to leave and start berating me and shut me in the room with the door shut. And I sent you guys an email about it. I sent you an email about this, so you know about it. So that's what happened. So I'm not comfortable going there because I was locked in the conference room with her, and I had to get out. I didn't want to be there by myself in the conference room with her. I didn't know if she filed a harassment complaint against me or not, and I didn't think it was appropriate, and I don't know why she's leaving.
Just for the record, I did not berate you. I will not be lied about. I have never in my 30-something years, I've been working since I was 16 years old, and I have never, ever been talked to like this or treated like this in my entire life, or been told I am a liar. I am not a liar. I have never been a liar. I pride myself on my professionalism, and I'm straying far from that right now, and I'm embarrassed that I have to do it, but I did not berate you. I was asked to be in there by a member of staff. She was in there so that she could explain the bills and claims to you if you had any questions, and you were in there by yourself. I did not hover over you the whole time, period. So I'm sorry that we see those two things differently, but I did not do that, and I did not berate you, and I would never berate you.
I understand.
Excuse me, but it's my turn now.
I won't be lied about. I didn't do that.
Commissioner Brennan, finish, and then we'll try to find a solution here.
You did hover over me. You did shut the door, and you did...
I shut the door because as an HR manager, I was trying to explain to you that I felt that it was inappropriate for you to ask questions about a complaint against you because I felt that you need to step away from the subject so the complaint can happen as it should happen, and then we can get to the bottom of what the problems are here at the Harbor District.
Okay.
That's why I asked you, in my HR professional opinion, that you should stay away from some of those items. That's all I asked you to do.
Ms. Harris, I do not want dialogue going back and forth right now because it's inappropriate.
It is inappropriate, but I will not be lied about.
So, Commissioner Brennan, if you have questions for Ms. Harris, can you please ask them outside of this discussion we're having right now on bills and claims?
I think you get the point that it's not appropriate for me to be
Understood.
At the administrative office.
Understood.
I think your point has been well illustrated here.
Okay. So again, I will go back to my original, what I said originally, that I will have staff find a solution where you will be able to somehow look at bills and claims not be in a situation that puts anyone in an uncomfortable
situation.
There's
no reason to have any volatile situation. It's just so unnecessary. We have standards.
It's unnecessary
we have
for people
email.
To be lied about.
Okay. So staff, you know, again, I don't want to take up the entire public's time discussing how we're going to do this. So if we could just have Mr. Grinnell come up with some solution.
I will tell you what we will do so everybody knows.
Okay.
We will put the bills and claims in the conference room like we always do.
Okay.
And we will have them there. We will enable Commissioner Brennan to come there and by herself sit and look at the bills and claims. She can come there. We can let her know after the treasurer has seen them. Or she can come the following day.
Mr. President, I rise to a point of order.
Yes.
The motion before the board is the approval of the bills and claims. The motion has been seconded. This is far afield of
right.
the business before right. the commission. I call the question.
You're right, and I apologize. You're right. Let's vote on bills and claims. Yes, let's vote on bills and claims. And Commissioner Brennan, if we could take this issue up during commission statements.
I think I've said all I need to say about it.
Okay. So can we please have a roll call on this?
Commissioner Brennan?
No.
Commissioner Holsinger?
Aye.
Commissioner Parravano?
Aye.
Commissioner Tucker?
Aye.
President Bernardo?
Aye. That's 4 ayes and 1 no. Bills and claims. Motion passes. So we are now at item number 7, which is authorization to pay bills and claims occurring between December 5th and January 14th in an amount not to exceed $900,000. Wow. Can you please explain this? Staff, I know that we do this every year, but can you please explain this once again for the benefit of those who don't understand what this $900,000 thing is?
We're missing 2 bills and claims.
Okay.
And that gives us between 4 and 5 weeks of having to make payments to our vendors. $900,000 represents monthly building claims, plus we have a couple capital projects that I don't know, sometimes we move forward and we spend on them or not, but we have an encumbrance with them. So if we finish the project in the 5 weeks, we do owe them the payment, and that's in about $300,000. So that's how I came up with
Thank you. So again, basically just to cover over the holidays.
Just to cover the holidays, yes.
Because there's going to be no commission meetings and we can't vote on these things. That's what this is for.
That's so correct. Move item 7.
Quick question.
Yeah.
Just a quick question. Could there be a mechanism in the future where we authorize the general manager or someone, or you, we deputize someone, so that this doesn't have to keep coming back every holiday, every year? Does it? Really? Okay, I'm sorry. Okay. Sorry, never mind. Did I hear a motion?
I made a motion.
Okay, I'm
second.
Sorry. Second?
Second.
Okay. Let's have a roll call, and then I just got a public comment on this item, but I'll have you speak after the roll call, please.
Commissioner Brennan?
No.
Commissioner Holsinger?
Aye.
Commissioner Parravano?
Aye.
Commissioner Tucker?
Aye.
President Bernardo?
Aye. That's 4 ayes, 1 no. Motion carries. I had an item on number 7 that just came in, so Mr. Warren.
One aspect of this district's procedures that I am not familiar with on the 2 boards that I'm on, all the checks are dual signature checks where they have to be signed by the manager and the director. Both boards have procedures for signing checks that can't wait until the next board meeting for approval. So I'm wondering, I'm really, really uncomfortable with delegating it completely to staff. I think you need to have at least one commissioner as a double check on all these things, especially when they're paid in advance of approval by the board. So, the obvious choice would be that the treasurer has to approve. It doesn't have to be the treasurer, but an obvious default that some commissioner has to approve all of these interim payments before the checks go out. I really think we need to do that.
Thank you. We are now at staff reports, admin, finance, and these are, you know, the general manager's report, director of finance, human resources, and Mr. Brunel, do you want to kick it off?
Yes, you have my report. I'll take any questions.
Commissioners, any questions on the general manager's report?
There was a question you were going to come back to. Do you remember what that was earlier? Let's see if I can find it.
Well, let's think about that. There was something you were going to elaborate on in your report. It's in your report now.
The real estate.
Which one was that?
The real estate appraisal.
Oh, the real estate appraisal.
Thank you. Yes.
Oh,
yes.
From tonight.
Okay. Yes. Yes. Oh, that's it. Thank you.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Yeah. I do have an update on that for you. I have contacted an appraiser, and I am waiting for his proposal, which will provide cost and timeline. As soon as that happens, we'll engage him unless it's unacceptable. We'll get to get another one.
I don't know how long that property will stay on the market.
A few weeks. Yeah.
Okay. Commissioner, questions for the general manager. Commissioner Brennan, did you have other questions?
So you expect that the appraisal will happen in January, is that, or in December?
I would hope, and I underline hope, to put it on the January 18th agenda in closed session for your review.
So it would have been done by then?
Yeah, that's what I hope. But again, I haven't received back, so I don't know what his timeline is.
I do have a question for the general manager. Mr. Grinnell, have you kept track of the number of PRA requests we've received this calendar year?
Oh, yes, we have. I haven't totaled them up. I would have to sit down and put together the information.
I simply ask that because I know we've received quite a number this year,
yes.
At least in relationship to prior years.
Yes.
So I would like to just have some idea the total number of PRA requests that we've had this year.
Certainly.
That we've been responding.
Yes, and I heard a question from a statement from the public earlier, so we'll pull that together.
Thank you.
Commissioners, any other questions for General Manager before we go to Director of Finance? Because I know that Commissioner Brennan has something to ask the Director of Finance. Okay. Commissioner Brennan, you had a question for Director of Finance, I believe?
Yeah, I'm just trying to follow up on some of the questions that I keep getting from the public that they seem to be having a hard time getting a response back on. One question is, what's the status of rent collection? And by that, I think what's meant is, are many tenants behind on rent? Is everybody in pretty good standing? Do we require a deposit so that we ensure that we have money to cover rent if there are any problems? Are there any plans to change policy there or anything that I need to know?
Well, when a tenant comes in, they're required to give us, for a monthly work rental, they're required to give us a security deposit in their first month of rent. It states in their wording agreement that they will issue a payment for their slip fees on the first of every month. And when they decide to leave, they're required to give us a 30-day termination notice, just like you would if you rented an apartment. And so let's say they say on May 1st, I'm leaving. Well, by June 1st, they're gone. And usually when they leave, you apply their security deposit to any unpaid rents or electricity or things of that nature. We do have a collection policy in when they fall in arrears. We do follow procedures to collect that money. And currently, they were doing it at the Harbors. Right now, we're trying to pull that up to finance so that
someone who may be very angry about falling in arrears and having to make payments to not take it out on someone in the accounting tech world that can call and work it out with us, and we work with them. So collections is an ongoing basis. It's every day. It's you know, making sure that people pay their rent. So we're really serious about it and working hard to keep on top of it.
So I know with some other marinas on in the South Bay, they have, I don't know if it's a bond or maybe Scott knows more about this, but they require a significant deposit so that there are really no risks for, or very few risks for the actual marina in the event that something bad were to happen, like a boat were to sink or something. I know that just happened recently. We had a boat that's... Yeah, I guess that's, is that
some... There are different policy coverage requirements. It just depends on what, let's say they have a fire, you know, and other boats are, the boat is the one that burns, all of a sudden it starts moving the fire to the other one, so the fire department gets there. That protects the other boats. I don't know if that answers your question.
So do we have, do all...
We have requirements for insurance.
There is minimum requirements for every boat that comes in.
And you think those are... sufficient as they are?
I think they're very sufficient right now. We don't have coverage for it. There's a lot of marinas like up in the Delta areas do.
What's it called?
Covered mortgage, where you see a boat that pulls into what looks like a big garage carport. And those, if we had those, I'd be saying we need to look at our dollar insurance and increase it, because when there is a fire, those are probably horizontal. Mm. And so you'll have a lot more boat damage. But here, usually when you have a fire or a similar problem, it stays in one spot. It doesn't travel too far at all.
Okay. Thank you. So I know that there's been a lot of stuff going on with refunding deposits and all of that showing up. How much money's involved with that? Like, I forgot what the dollar amount was of the deposits that we were holding that needed to be refunded, or just a rough estimate.
Deposit. I mean, we could look and see what it was June 30th.
I noticed, just in the sense of what I see going through before it goes to finance, mm-hmm. is that there's usually anywhere from $10 return of deposit to $200.
Yeah, 310, 20, 227, 268, 396.
Oh, you're talking about the refunds. Yeah. I thought you asked a different question.
I think you and I were on the same page.
What do you mean?
So, like, I think she's asking, what do we hold in deposits? So, like, for the year, or June, it was $288,000.
Okay. And
and that's for both facilities together.
And is some of that money what we're slowly reimbursing people that should have
already... So what happens is like the auditor said, we have, you know, we hold this money in a liability, and then we have people that pay rent. And so when John Doe leaves and his rent's $640 and he has $100 electricity and he leaves, he has a deposit on hand of $640. When he says, I'm gone and my boat's gone, we take that liability and we apply it to his receivable. That's where you might have a negative receivable. That's when we write a check. We say, out of your security deposit, you had, you know, we collected for rent and this and that, and this is what's remaining.
So
we do have, I mean, I think this bills and claims has a lot of refund deposits, and that's because I'm going through and making sure that everyone left has their money, because what was happening in the past is people would leave and float off, say, I'll keep my deposit, I'll be back. Mm-hmm. Well, the problem is if someone's back 3 years from now, maybe their address has changed, or sometimes people might think, since we have their money, we're saving them a slip. Mm-hmm. They think that, oh, they have my deposit, so, oh, that means they have a space for me. And sometimes that's, you know, it just sends the wrong message. I think it's cleaner to reduce our liabilities and just, you know, if you come back, we'll just start you new with a new deposit.
So how is that process going? Are you getting done with it? Are you about halfway done with it?
Oh, almost all, yeah. Pretty good.
So that we won't see so many of those?
I'd say the next couple bills and claims, but yeah.
And some of it never goes away just because people...
Right, there's always going to be some need to do that.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks for...
Well, that's a good point, because during and that's the other reason why there's a lot of metropolitans, is during the crab season or during the fishing season, someone might come and rent for 3 months. Well, now 3 months later, I'm issuing them a check. And a good example, I took a picture with my phone, was our accounting tech at Filler Point had 40 new slips in a week. Mm-hmm. Well, that's 40 new checks going to be cutting in 3 months. So it is an ongoing process. You just have to make sure you stay on top of it.
So I was contacted by Shane Hale. And I think you've already communicated with him.
Yeah, he actually sent me a very pleasant email thanking me for the account status I gave him. We're working together. He's, you know, going to look through with his wife with his checks and get back to me. But, you know, we worked out what his problems were and he was happy so far. So
I understand.
I can keep you posted.
So there was a lien put on his boat? Is that what happened? Because he said he had to go to the DMV, that there was
a
lien.
And that's where things get sticky, is that he sold a boat to someone else. Well, he didn't transfer title. So when that someone else wasn't paying their bill, it's kind of like if you sold your car and someone didn't process the title and registration, you would still be getting the bills.
So that's...
So it's more involved, I mean...
So is that what happened?
Yeah,
the person?
And I explained it to them.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. And then another question somebody had was, we've had an account temps employee, I guess, at Oyster Point Marina. I don't know if I even have that right. Maybe it's at the admin office.
No, you're right. Oyster Point.
Oh, at Oyster Point. Mm-hmm. And is that person the acting receptionist? Or
yes.
Okay.
And
so
it got voted on. I actually printed a copy of that.
I think I remember.
It came to the board because we didn't have anyone when the
so were
employee
they,
left. We had to actually have someone else answer the phone and take the payments.
Okay, so they're doing more than just being a receptionist. They are actually handling money.
Yeah, they're opening accounts. They're applying payments.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, that helps.
Yeah.
And then, let's see. The question has come up numerous times about whether or not you're aware that we're an enterprise district and following the rules, the financial rules for an enterprise district. So we are doing that?
Yes.
Okay.
Doing what we're
all right. So I just wanted to make sure that was really clear that we were all on the same page, because I know there's been a lot of confusion about
what is and what's not.
What is an enterprise district? So I just wanted to clear that up. That's it. Thank you.
Okay.
Any other questions, commissioners? Not. Thank you, Ms. Larson.
Oh, I thought of one more.
Oh, yeah.
The last question, and I've been asked this question now lately a lot by the public. What are your qualifications? Do you have a CPA degree? That question has been asked numerous times.
Okay, I have the qualifications.
You know, I understand your question, and I understand the public's curiosity as to what people's, you know, backgrounds and credentials are. I find that question, I mean, personally, if I were sitting as the director of finance, if someone asked me that, I personally would feel offended.
I am.
It would be kind of offensive to me. I mean, you know, I don't know. That's just my take on it, and I don't know if that's appropriate to ask.
As a board, we do need to know these things, because this is the person that we are entrusting with our finances for the district, and we are ultimately responsible for the way the district is being run. And so it's important that we know that. It's not like I'm asking a bookkeeper that. I'm asking our finance director. This is our finance director who is responsible for
your information. When you voted for her, you should have asked those questions then.
I agree. I should have, but I didn't. I agree. That was a mistake. I should have asked
them. The CPA is not a requirement for that.
I didn't say that it was a requirement.
I'm just letting the board know.
Asking for clarification.
Okay, you know.
And we should have all asked that question then.
Well, here's the thing.
Point of order, please.
Yes.
This is not a question about the report.
Yeah.
We've gone far afield of the purpose and scope of this agenda item.
So
I think your question is better asked outside of this, you know, this particular, you know,
apparently, it's not my question, first of all. It's the public's question, and they have asked repeatedly, and they have not been given an answer, which is why they brought it to my attention to try to get an answer to the question. So the public has asked. They haven't gotten an answer.
I got an answer.
So
I know the public member that you're talking about, and I said I'm not a CPA, and neither was Marcia Schnapp, and neither was Genevieve Frederick, and neither were other members. Okay. And so I am offended, and I'm glad you brought that word up, because I find it completely offensive.
Ms. Galarza, thank you. I personally feel that you do not have to stick.
And I'm leaving.
I personally feel that you do not have to to take all of
that's
this.
Amazing.
So I just,
And I apologize if you found what I said offensive. So I'm sorry.
Wow. Nice job.
Thank you, Ms. Galarza. Okay, we are we're going to move on to item number 11. Operations Harbor Master Grindy.
Sorry, I was hoping to do this. You have my report, but I did want to make two additional comments here. As you recall, I forgot to write down the date, but we brought to the board for going out to bid for the concession building sewer line liner project. It went out to bid. Bidders that might have bid did not bid. So we're working on making some informational changes and such to the bid so we go back out and bid again. I anticipate bringing that back to the board probably the January meeting, if not the second. It's hard to bid during the holiday season. The second item was on the sewer lines under the pier. I found out from State Parks that there is some minor amount of grant money, but I recommend to the board straight up that we don't move there because it would take us another 4 or 5 months to get the project done, and it's only about $20,000. And it's a $170,000 change project. And we could not start the project until we get the grant money. So it would be much of a delay. So, anyway, you have my report. Any questions?
Questions for Harbor Master Grindy?
I didn't quite follow what happened with the sewer line. Could you explain that a little bit better?
Well, there's a grant process out there because it has a pump out for boats. And they would not fund all the line work, but they would fund a portion of it. But the percentage is so small that I want to be transparent as far as what could be available. We probably want to do it in future work that is only for pump out system. That's what it was designed for, was just for pump outs.
I see.
If that was one line just went straight to the pump out, it'd be honky dory.
Oh.
But it's not, it has a whole bunch of mixed use to it.
Right.
So it makes it fractionally just a piece of really. The contractor had a delay amount in there. So then all of a sudden we had to go. The cost value of that grant goes down as much as nothing.
So when do you think that project, so now you have to go out to, you said you have to go out to bid a second time?
No, you're talking about project.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's the other sewer line.
Yeah.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I wish we had two different names that were so drastically different because the combination of the names sounds similar. But on the peer project, it's 2 weeks ahead. The contracts are signed. Contractors should be giving me, we gave them those to proceed.
On the pier,
yeah.
Okay.
We're just waiting for them to come back and say we're going to be doing our pre-construction meeting probably in the next couple of days. They do their lay down and pipe and ordering and everything else and get rolling.
Great. But the other project then is going to go back out to bid a second time?
Potentially, yeah.
Okay. And that was because the wrong people bid or they
didn't? No, the bidders didn't bid.
Nobody bid. Okay. Thanks.
Any other questions?
I do have a question for you. First of all, I want to commend you on the progress that's been made regarding the offshore buoys and other buoys. I saw that was on KTVU. And I want to note that part of that seems to be as a result of the meeting that you organized and held in the Harvard Master office not too long ago. Do you have any other meetings planned?
Not at this time. I'd love to have more, but I think that we had over 14 people show up, and the impact is there as far as the meeting we did. It might be something in the January month, I think. You know, a lot of people just won't attend during the holiday season anyway. And with the crabbing going on, the fishermen are not going to show up because they're out fishing. But I really think that the more immediate impact we have, we gain more credibility with it.
That raises one other question. What's the size of the catch for crabs this season? I understand the crabs are a bit smaller and the catch is down.
I haven't had a lot of detail on that right now.
Just want to tell you, Congresswoman Spear has been really involved in this.
Phenomenally involved, yeah. Yes.
If you could find your way clear to send her a copy of that KTVU report.
I already did.
That's all I had. I mean, she recently sent us a letter, a beautiful letter, committing the rescue effort.
Yeah.
And I know she's really on top of the bully situation, and that would just give her a little more
ammunition. Her staff have been tremendously helpful, doing other things for us as far as getting the word out.
And I know that Congresswoman Anna Ishii is involved also, because they were together at a recent function that I had. And I know she knows.
Great. Thank you.
Any other questions for Master Grandy? Thank you so much.
Yes.
Thank you. Okay, we are now at item 12.
I just had a
talk. And we're at item 12, which is committee reports.
Point of order, Mr. President.
Oh, you know what? Actually, before that, I want to apologize to a speaker because I just noticed I got lost in this. Item number 9, back to Director of Finance. Mr. Olam had a comment card, and Director of Finance is the But if you would like to, Mr. Olam, if you'd like to take this time right now to. This was under number 9, I'm sorry.
Thank you, sir. I believe that it was appropriate that she did leave. She wasn't going to like what we talked about. On my questions lately, care requests have been related to financial. The other day, I was invited to come to the office and look at check reconciliations where you can show the emails. I went in there, and the same thing happened to me, pretty much that happened to Commissioner Brent. First, Ms. Galarraza came in, and Ms. Harris came in, and they sat down in front of me. Before I got much to look at it, conversation went from pretty okay to way south. I was accused of slandering people because of the questions I was asking. I was told that harassment charges were going to be filed against me because I, the one who asked, what were your qualifications to be a financial director? So the reason I asked that question is because she keeps using the word audit, and they tell me that that's not what's going on. And she said a few other things that I said made me wonder if she really know what she's talking about. So I just asked. And I was told, yes, that she has no CPA or no certificate. Eventually, I was told that she'd gone to school a decade or so ago, had a bachelor's degree, and it was sort of indicated to me that she might have had some training at that time. Don't know if that's the case or not. I've been trying to get, while I was there, that's when I found out that one of those negative numbers were part of prepayments. So I've since asked for accounts receivable reports with unredacted account numbers so that I can actually track. Sarah's pointed out $7,000 approximately prepayment, and I can't find where that $7,000 goes from $7 to $650 or $6,000 or $5,000. And I really can't say what's going on because, as you know, without the account numbers, and this list is quite long, it's hard for me to say that that number goes to that account and then look at compared to another month's and say that number goes to that account. And so I asked for that, and Mr. Grinnell sent me redacted invoices with the same exact redacted data. No way to know. I've asked for things like emails and liens, things that people who were harassed over the problems with the collections of checks and stuff like that at OPM. And while I did receive one email from the Paul Margot, which frankly did not reflect well on him, that's the only one I got. Yet I have seen others, and people have told me that these things exist, and I haven't gotten them yet. Now, I'll go real quick on the last one. Nobody has quantified yet how much of the auto deposits are part of the accounting problem at OPM. They had a system there, or you have a system that takes people's credit cards and is supposed to automatically charge them. The Palomar, his bill was $2,000. They missed six payments on it. I've asked, how much have you collected from people like that from missed payments? I'm told, we don't know. I've asked, how much more is there like that? I'm told, we don't know. The same kind of behavior you've seen from Ms. Harris and Ms. Galazar was exhibited toward me. I was the one that had my back to the window. I never threatened anybody. And I know I'm going to be a smartass, but I thought I was being on my best behavior. Well, you might have thought that was funny, but when there's three people sitting in front of me trying to explain why I'm wrong, it won't give me a chance to look at where I'm
standing. Trying to explain why you were wrong.
This isn't supposed to be a conversation. This is public comment. So I'm sorry, Mr.
This is the second time that she's made it a conversation when I've been speaking. This is professionalism with her staff. These are the people that are asking for three-year contracts. So I really think you need to start thinking about what's going on there and how they're treating people. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, Mayor Light, has a harassment charge been filed against me? Can you answer that? Because that was what was threatened. When I was leaving, before Ms. Galazar stopped off the room, she said, I'm filing harassment charges against you.
I don't know.
She was there, she saw it, and I believe this lady here heard.
Can I say something, please?
We're going to move on, though.
I was there with both of them. I saw the whole thing, and I think they forgot that I was there. So if I need to make a statement, I will.
Okay, thank you. This is not the time for that, though. We're not having that discussion right now. Thank you.
I missed my report, so I just have a question.
I'm sorry. Okay, Ms. Harris, we're at number 10.
Okay, so I've been asked to provide some information regarding... think drinking at events and the lunch hour. I just want to make it clear because I know sometimes I go back to the office and I get confused about what exactly you want from me.
Yes.
So I just want to make sure that you're asking, do we have a policy regarding that or?
Yeah, okay. That's basically, is there a policy regarding alcohol, for example?
Okay. And I would just like to apologize to the board for my outburst, but I usually take my job very seriously and I'm just not used to people not thinking that I take my job seriously, that I do. And I'd like to apologize to Mr. Ulam because I think our intent was to try to explain to him how our processes work. And while I do agree with him that it did go sideways, that's not what we wanted to do. What we wanted to do was to try to explain the processes of the office. And I thought we had good intentions and I apologize to him if it didn't work out the way we all wanted it to.
Can I speak to the applicant?
Yes, sure.
In your report, we have a rule, a hard and fast rule, that we do not pay for alcohol.
Right.
So anybody...
I'm sorry, wait a minute. We do not pay for alcohol. What does that mean?
If you go on a business trip representing this district, whether you be an employee or a harbor commissioner, and you have a martini at dinner, we do not pay that.
Okay. My question is this, actually. I'm going to be more specific in my question then. At the Port of Oakland, where I work, we have employee appreciation events. And we have iced tea and Coca-Cola. Okay? We don't have alcohol. Mm-hmm. Could the district have at its employee appreciation alcohol? That's my question.
Okay.
Okay, that's...
Is it at night? Is it during the day or at night?
Our events where I work are during the day. It's a lunchtime event.
Okay.
In a park.
Okay.
Just wanted to
Commissioner Brennan, is this related to
that? It's related to that. Just add on really quick that
at the commissioner, at the, sorry, at the holiday, I don't even know what it was, employee appreciation dinner, there was alcohol provided, and I didn't know that we had a rule that this district didn't pay for alcohol. So if that's the case, as Commissioner Tucker stated, who paid for the alcohol we drank at that big dinner?
Did we pay for it?
No, we did not.
Well, who?
We don't pay for it.
Who paid for it? Because I didn't pay for it.
Maybe somebody bought it.
Okay, can we
don't pay for it.
Okay, can we have that that your follow-up question with regard packaged with my question? I mean, in this whole, what I'm going to call alcohol discussion, we'll have this reported out. I just want to keep this meeting moving forward. Anything else for Ms. Harris? Ms. Harris, anything else?
No, that's it.
Thank you. Okay, sorry. I'm just sorry to have skipped over you. We are at committee reports, for which I don't think we have any. Okay. So now we are at commission statements. So, Commissioner, I'm going to start on my left. Commissioner Holton.
There's always lots of things to say, but I think tonight I'll just wish everybody a happy holiday.
Thank you, Commissioner.
I have nothing.
Mr. Parvana.
I have some questions about the commercial activity permits for non-leasee fish buyers. At our last meeting, the general manager stated that essentially, correct me if I get this wrong, Mr. Grinnell, but what I understood was that at this time, the policy for commercial activity permits for non-leasing fish buyers and their fees involved in that policy, that is not being actively enforced and the fees are not being collected. So we have had this policy since 2012 with zero enforcement, zero fee collection. And I'm wondering why we have this policy and if we should remove this policy, since it suggests that we should collect, it states that we should collect fees, which are almost, which are identical to the fish buyer's fees. So it's the same fee structure plus a $250 permit. We are requiring that the fish buyers pay the fees, but it's a double standard when we aren't requiring that the non-leasee fish buyers pay the fees. So there's an inconsistency there that doesn't seem right, and it also doesn't seem like a public agency should have a policy that requires fees and not enforce it. If it's unenforceable, I think we should get rid of the policy. And apparently the staff has no idea how to enforce it, because General Manager Grinnell has stated that repeatedly, that they have no clue how to enforce this policy. So I'm concerned about that, and I know I've raised this issue with President Bernardo. So at a future meeting, I will be requesting that this be put on the agenda to have some resolution. Unless General Manager Grinnell has an update that includes a resolution sooner. Is there any update there?
For Commissioner Brennan and the rest of the board and the public, I'll remind you that you got this item on a previous board agenda. You provided a status report of it. You got that report, so you know the situation. More than that, you just sent me an email with a list of questions. I responded and said those are good questions and they need to be answered before we implement that thing. That's the state of affairs with things, and I take issue with the way you characterize my response. You do this continuously and I really find it objectionable.
What is it about what I said that is not accurate?
That I don't have a clue about this. That is simply not true.
I didn't say you, I said the staff.
That okay. is also not true.
Okay.
Well, it is. If I can I read what you said here? You said,
okay, I'm going to.
We cannot proceed until these questions are addressed, but you have no information about how to implement.
Okay, order please. We're not going to have this conversation, okay? This is not the conversation I want, especially, you know, this is becoming a kind of a... This is not what we're supposed to be talking about.
Could we just clarify the date? He said he was going to provide resolution, but he didn't say when.
Point of order. This is the time for commissioners' comments, not the time for repartee, requests, or motions, or agendizing any
items. So I'll bring it up at another meeting. It's okay.
Do you have any other commissioner statements, Commissioner Brennan?
Just that I think that the situation with this policy related to commercial activity permits for non-leasee fish buyers very much relates and reflects on our current fish buying fees that are being required of our commercial fish buyers. And I think there is a direct correlation there, and we are going to be discussing fish buying fees and leases for fish buyers in closed session. So I did think it was pertinent tonight. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. I just have a couple quick things. And first is, you know, when I was on the South San Francisco Personnel Board, the Civil Service Board, we would periodically go over all of the policies and just update them, you know, for example, for the fire department, they kept saying firemen, and, you know, we wanted to make it gender neutral, firefighter, for example. So that's just an example. But with regards to our policies, I know that we have policies that go way, way, way back. In fact, there's one here, I think it was contracts, that severance was spelled wrong and things like that. Is there a mechanism, and I'm not saying I don't want an answer now, okay, but I just want to plant this in your heads, and I think you know where I'm going with this. Is there an opportunity to update all of these antiquated policies so that we could just kind of bring them to the 21st century and kind of, you know, and I'm not making fun of anyone. I'm just saying that I think that it would be good to periodically update policies so that we avoid confusion and, you know, people, you know, wondering, you know, what's going on with certain policies and things like that. That's one. So just wanted to plant that out there. Second of all, want to really quickly, if you'll humor me, read a letter that I got with regards to, I think it's good for the public record because this person couldn't make it to tonight's meeting. They emailed me at 5.06 p.m. Dear President Bernardo, please pass on a hearty dose of appreciation to your commissioners for confidence and foresight in allowing Princeton Water's temporary permission to accept visitors here for lodging. Commissioner Pietro has such a passion for our harbor, is supportive, and always has kind words. Commissioner Holzinger has vision and understands the potential just using what we have here without further investment and minimal cost for liability. President Bernardo, I applaud your effective efforts in neutralizing miscommunications and uniting your team, as it is great meaning to the grantee, you are all united in your decisions. I have already responded to Commissioners Brennan and Tucker, and thank you, happy holidays, Cynthia Kerr, Princeton Waters Maritime Salon. I just wanted to read that because I came in earlier and she couldn't make it. And I just wanted to say, before we go into closed session, this was a tough meeting, I have to say. This was a tough meeting tonight. There were a lot of raw emotions that went back and forth, and I know that I have to improve my Robert's Rules, and I am committed to that. You know, it's challenging to have meetings sometimes, and there will be continuously, you know, challenges. This is the halfway point of my presidency, and I want to thank everyone for bearing with me for kind of muddling through it. I've never been president of the Harbor District before. You know, and so I really want to thank you for putting up with it. And I just want to say happy holidays to everyone and happy new year. And I will see you all. We'll see all of you in 2014. So now we're going to go into item number 13, which is, we're not in closed session yet. Item number 13. Technically, we have to identify a district real property negotiator before we go into closed session, correct? I mean, that's what we're... Okay, so we're going to, right now, for the purposes of this process, designate District Real Property Negotiator Peter Grinnell for closed session.
Move to go to closed session.
Okay, second?
Second.
Okay, motion and second. All in favor of going to closed session?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
I mean, I can't vote for that, the way that you framed it.
Okay, I'm sorry.
So we are supposed to vote for the real property negotiator? Is that what we're doing?
No.
Real, just designate?
Right.
No, we're supposed to vote to designate the real property negotiator.
Point of order, that is not what you are doing. You are merely identifying who your agenda already shows as your real property negotiator. The motion was to move into closed session.
Right. My apologies, to go into closed session.
The Brown Act states that we have to identify a real property negotiator as a board, which means we should vote to identify a real property negotiator, and that's not what we've done here tonight. So that is a problem.
Can you please explain that, Ms. Saber?
Mr. Brennan, I disagree with that. For decades, you've been identified Mr. Grinnell as your real property negotiator. Your agenda identifies him as that. That is who your real property negotiator is.
And Ms. Saber, correct me if I'm wrong. For the purposes of going into closed session, I understand that that's sort of the, you know, the pro forma. But that once we're in closed session, if we choose to appoint another real property negotiator, we can do that, can we not? Okay, so I just
but
wanted
for,
to...
For this
but,
session,
right,
for
the purpose of going into closed session, that's what this is about.
Correct.
It's not we're not putting ourselves into any particular corner, if you will.
Correct.
Okay. So
well,
I just
like to say for the minutes that I object to going into closed session without having a vote to identify the real property negotiator. That's all I'm going to say about that.
Okay. So again, the motion was regarding closed session. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
I'm opposed.
Okay. One. So four ayes, one no. Motion carries. We're going into closed session. What am I signing here? Then what is it?